Looking to start a podcast but don't know where to begin? Look no further. The team at Dodge Media Productions has 20 years of experience as podcast listeners and observing the industry and 8 years experience in podcast production. We can help you take your podcast from idea to fruition and we'll make the process seamless and easy. We'll help you with everything from recording and editing to hitting the charts on Apple Podcasts. So what are you waiting for? Contact us today and let's get started. DodgeMediaProductions.com.
You're listening to Dodge Movie Podcast. Your hosts are Christy and Mike Dodge, the founders of Dodge Media Productions. We produce films and podcasts, so this is a podcast about films. Join them as they share their passion for filmmaking.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Dodge Movie Podcast. This is episode 165, and we are talking about the 1976 film Network. It is directed by Sidney Lumet, who in 57 did 12 Angry Men, 73, I love this film, Serpico, and 1975's Dog Day Afternoon. The writer is Patty
Never know how to say his name.
Chayefsky.
That guy.
And Patty is P-A-D-D-Y, so I believe it's a fella, not a lady.
It is.
He also wrote 1973's The Way We Were and 1980's Altered States. It stars Faye Dunaway, William Holden, Peter Finch, Robert Duvall, and Ned Beatty. And I'm going to bust in here a little bit. They should have cast somebody different for either the William Holden character or the Peter Finch, because I kept getting confused about who was who.
Right.
Eventually, I figured out that Peter Finch had like a little bit more wild, whitish hair.
He did.
Then,
so is that because they were trying to show that back then they were all cookie cutter on air? Would be my only guess.
I'm sure it was. Or men all look the same back then. I don't know.
Yeah, all white. Since they were all white.
Yeah. The DP was Owen Roizman, who did another favorite of mine, 1971's French Connection, 1973's The Exorcist, and a fave of ours, 82's Tootsie. I believe we have talked Tootsie
yeah, for and the podcast. French Connection as well.
Yes, yes, yes. It was filmed mostly in New York and Toronto. New York was most of it, but any of the studio scenes, because there wasn't a studio that would give them the space, so they would go up to a small TV station in Toronto to film any of the studio stuff. Little tidbit there. The synopsis for this film is a television network cynically exploits a deranged former anchor's ravings and revelations about the news media for its own profit, but finds that his message may be difficult to control. And so I found it interesting in the trivia, they talked about that this was a satirical drama. And I've never really heard of a satirical drama. Like, usually something's like a spoof or, you know, kind of like the mockumentary. So I found that interesting that they did that. And I wonder if it confused audiences of, are they taking themselves seriously? Or are they poking fun at this industry?
I don't think it was intended as satire. I think that interpretation came after the fact.
Mm-hmm. So I've got four taglines for you. The first one's quite long, so bear with me.
Okay.
Network, the humanoids, the love story, the trials and tribulations, the savior of television, the attempted suicides, the assassination. It's all coming along with a galaxy of stars you'll know and love.
Bleh.
And that's like that.
That's ridiculously long.
Yeah. Okay. They get shorter. Not since the dawn of time has America experienced a man like Howard Beale.
Okay.
Does that tell you anything?
Nope.
Other than, I guess, he's a unique fella. That's what I get from that.
Yeah.
Television will never be the same.
Okay.
Which is interesting. Prepare yourself for a perfectly outrageous motion picture.
No.
So they're kind of calling out that it's a little bit of a satire. I wonder, this was long after Orson Welles did The War of the Worlds, probably.
Yeah, decades.
Kick us off with your pickup line.
This story is about Howard Beale. Delivered as voiceover from Max Schumacher, who is played by Bill Holden.
Pretty much.
Right on.
Right on the nose.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So one thing I wanted to say that I found fascinating as we were watching this and I was doing a little bit of research. This is somewhat based on a true event, like a real thing that happened. This woman, and I'm curious enough to somewhat want to watch the documentary, but I don't think I can.
Yeah.
This real woman went on air and killed herself.
Yeah, it's horrible.
And they brought, and it was broadcast.
Well, of course. If it bleeds, it leads.
Well, but I would love to know, maybe that's when you read the wiki article, Mike says.
Yeah.
But even that seemed kind of sad. But I mean, she was hurting and dealing with some mental issues. But to take that and go like, I know, let's spoof this. And maybe they weren't trying to capitalize on the poor woman's death, but more to point like, look at how absurd and outrageous the news industry is.
Yeah. I bring this movie up to people because it was made in, what was it, 78, did you say?
76.
76. So this is almost 50 years ago, and it captured exactly what the quote-unquote news does now, right? And that was the whole point of it, was the William Holt character of Max Schumacher saying, like, back in the day, we had integrity. 50 years ago.
And they speak of Edward R. Morrow.
Yeah, and no relation to Dustin, by the way. And
well, we don't know.
Well, that's true, I guess. And the parting shot line is again VO from Max Schumacher, and he says, "The first instance of a man who was killed because he had poor ratings."
Mm.
And I mean, really, can the television industry say that they're that much different than what we see there?
No. In fact, as we were watching this, I'm a big fan of The Morning Show, and I felt like a lot of what they were talking about were, I'm seeing echoed in that show.
Sure.
And I'm almost positive that season one, Steve Carell's character, the story seems to parallel similarities of Matt Lauer's demise at the Today Show. And I feel like either people were worried he was going to kill himself, or he does go off. I can't remember. It's been a while.
The Steve Carell character. Yeah. I think that seems vaguely familiar. Yeah. And I noticed that Howard Beale has a couple of fingers of whiskey before going on air, which I'm sure is probably still, have you seen, I guess,
Hoda and Kathy Lee, Hoda and they Kathy just do Lee, it right? on air.
And then the whole thing where they're working with the Symbionese Liberation Army.
Mm. Well,
where
the clone of, yeah.
Right. They're working with them, right? They're collaborating with these people. And then the Faye Dunaway character has been echoed many, many times, I'm sure, also in The Morning Show, where all she thinks about is basically ratings.
Yep.
And even to the point where, and this is maybe satirical, where she's on this romantic getaway with her boyfriend at the time, and every line of dialogue she issues is about the TV industry, including when they're having Boom Chicka Wow Wow time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it was kind of almost a caricature. Mm-hmm. Like, would a person really not be able to talk about anything but that? Which comes to set design. In the apartment that she shares with Bill Holden there, they're having a fight and the door to the bathroom is open. There's a little half bath on the first floor by the stairs.
Mm-hmm.
And over the toilet is a poster from Singing in the Rain, which I think is hilarious for a place where you pee. But she has no sense of humor. So why would that character put that there? But that was a great one. I like that visual sight gag.
So one of my favorite screenwriters, Aaron Sorkin, claimed that Patty C.
Yeah, Patty C.
And particularly the script for this film have been a major inspiration for his own writing. He said he has written no predictor of the future. Not even Orwell has ever been as right as Patty C. was when he wrote Network.
Yeah. And when I first saw this film, it was probably 20 years ago or so. At the time, I was like, isn't it amazing how this film is so old and it so exactly captures the problem with television news, right?
Yes.
And then it's still just as bad.
Yes. And then listen to this. It was in the trivia. I don't know if you saw this. In 2005, by the way, I'm getting all this through IMDb. In 2005, in preparation for what would eventually be a scrapped project for a live television adaptation for this film, George Clooney screened the film for a group of teens and young adults in order to determine their reactions to it. He found, much to his surprise, that none of the young people recognized this film as satire. "I couldn't understand it," Clooney told the Associated Press. Then he realized that everything that Patty C. wrote about had happened.
Right.
So, of course, they're like, oh, this is just like a biopic.
Right. There's a line in there I love that says that network TV news is the most awesome propaganda source, which is, well, kind of what I've been saying before.
Right.
So this, along with Wag the Dog, really, I think,
yes,
should awaken folks perhaps to kind of that whole industry. And I remember, yes, my cousin worked at a news station for a long time. And at one point she had this amazing defense, this verbal gymnastics, or mental, I guess, gymnastics, that no, the viewer is supposed to know that the news is like this, and then basically account for it. And I'm like, no, just don't be like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You shouldn't expect all of the millions of viewers to know this is going on. You should just be better.
Yeah. So this is a little bit long, but I think it bears going over. The writer was eerily, as we've been saying, prescient in his screenplay for three significant ways. So the first is the screenplay pertains to the goings-on at UBS, a fictional fourth network that existed alongside ABC, CBS, and NBC. In 1987, Fox became the real fourth network. Secondly, in her speech to her employees about her goals, UBS Diana Christensen, the character that Faye Dunaway plays, says, "I don't want conventional programming on this network. I want counterculture. I want anti-establishment." With the type of programming that Fox had on its debut series, Married with Children, which was about a very unconventional family, and the Tracy Ullman show, that, you know, exemplified kind of that anti-establishment. Then third, Diana Christensen creation of the show about the
Ecumenical Liberation Army.
Thank you. And its criminal activities is prescient of reality TV. And the result of the writer's strike, this is what I was trying to remember the other day when you brought up the writer's strike. The writer's strike of 1988 lasted 22 weeks, and Fox started to run low on new content. So it replaced other shows with shows like Cops,
Bad Boys, Bad Boys,
An American Family, and Scared Straight. And so that is kind of like the beginning of this reality, right, show boom that we now are in, like, the middle of.
Yeah, although one could argue that Cops was more reality than current reality television, but yeah.
True enough, true enough.
Was the network on the morning show, was it also UBS?
No, I think it's UBS. N,
yeah,
is so, the morning show network.
One of the things that we forget is that this was, you know, in 76. This is back shooting on film, Steadicam, no GoPro, none of that stuff.
Right.
And one of the things that drives me to lose sleepless nights is focus problems. And Bill Holden gives a very impassioned monologue where he tells Diana that she is TV incarnate. I think this is during their breakup scene, and it's out of focus. And they cut back to her, and then they cut to him. And so, as we've talked about time and again, that was the best take. And so they, like, lived with it, which, again, don't know how many people would notice that other than me.
Well, I wonder, because in the trivia they talked about for the cinematography, that Sydney shot a certain lighting scheme. I don't know if you read this. It said that the film's opening scene, he shot it with as little light as possible so that it felt more like a documentary. And then as the film progressed, added more light and more camera moves. And by the end of the film, it was brightly lit and slick. And so that scene that you're referring to would have happened at least later in the film. Middle, if not later. Yeah. So you'd think I was going to make an argument for, was the light so low? And then they, when they pulled it up, it was out of focus, but there went that theory.
Well, yeah, if I recall correctly, the apartment was probably very poorly lit. So you had a wide aperture and hence a shallow depth of field.
Right.
And I think at one point Holden moves into focus and then back out. So I think what happened was the camera had pulled for a certain distance and he leaned forward.
Yeah, he got off his mark.
Yeah. So, and that happens.
So both Sydney and Patty say it was not meant to be satire. It was a reflection of what was really going on.
And I think it still really is going on, with the exception of, to my knowledge, been shot on a game show.
Oh my gosh. I mean, part of me is surprised that we haven't seen more on screen, like reality violence, but thank goodness.
Well, you know, there's of course the Maury Povich show, which was kind of famous for that, or Jerry Springer, which are both, right? People throw in chairs. And then there was that horrible, was it Jenny Jones or Jesse Raphael or somebody?
That happened off.
That was off screen. Hopefully people have gotten a little bit better, but I don't know. That's a good question. We see stuff happening on these reality shows that I think in real life, you wouldn't be surprised if fists were thrown, but they aren't, because I think the people on the reality shows now are all amateur actors. They know they're playing a role, and so they're not
Thank goodness, like I'm thinking of The Challenge. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Go ahead.
But I'm thinking of The Challenge and, you know, the real worlds and the like, and when it has come to blows, they usually come down pretty hard. And, you know, there's a rule that if you do throw punches, you're going to be sent home. And
yeah.
So then you cut to the housewives where they just scream at each other every episode. Right. So it's verbally violent, not physically.
Yeah. And maybe I'm cynical, but I believe that those characters all know they're playing a role and they don't take it as serious as on the early episodes of reality TV, where they're just real people who are having interactions and getting upset with each other. Right.
Right.
One thing I did notice though is the subtle product placement. There's a bucket of KFC that the revolutionaries are eating. And then Cutty Sark, which I believe is a type of, is it a whiskey or a bourbon? I think it's a whiskey. Right. That bottle was well placed there. From just a set perspective, though, I don't know if you noticed that. There's an executive dining room where they're having a meal and they're talking about putting the Howard Beale show on after he's, you know, said he was going to kill himself. And the chairs they sit in are like the cheapest. They were what you would find in a regular person's home around their dining room table. They had this weird wicker kind of mesh back. They were not at all boardroom chairs. And so all I can think was they were in that Toronto facility and they're like, we need to shoot this scene. And somebody just found that. But did you notice that the Robert Duvall character, when he was in his tuxedo, did you see all the ruffles? Not only on the chest, I didn't remember this from the 70s, but his cuffs were even ruffled. It looked like Jerry Seinfeld's puffy shirt.
Well, you know, it was the style back then.
Yeah, and they embraced it.
I thought this was interesting because usually the writer is banned from the set, but I think Patty and Sydney were buddies. And so Patty was welcomed on the set to oversee Sydney's direction, and he would give him advice on how different scenes should be played. And Lumet claims that Patty had a better comedic instinct than he did. And so when it came time for to shoot the argument scene between William Holden and Beatrice Straight, the four times married director told Patty, please, I know more about divorce than you. It's kind of cool. Beatrice Straight, she's only on screen for 5 minutes and 2 seconds. And so hers is the briefest performance ever to win an Oscar.
Yeah, and Ned Beatty he was also on screen for very little.
But he was on screen for more than she was.
So,
and I believe he got.
I think he won too. But so I got a feel for Holden and Finch because they were on screen most of the time and they didn't get an award.
I know, right? Well, they did. We'll get to that. The only music heard in the film comes from commercials and television show themes. Otherwise, there is no score in this film at all.
Oh, wow. John Williams is bitter.
Yeah. So was there any head trauma in this film?
Well, Howard Beale passes out in his office and falls to the ground. And then on his TV show, he keeps passing out time and again. So I'm going to say each and every one of those times, I'm going to go with head trauma.
All right. Right. And you mentioned you kind of alluded to some smooching maybe that happened.
Smoochy, smoochy, smoochy. Yeah, so first Diana kisses Max in the car on the way to the romantic beach getaway. And then Max kisses Diana goodbye when he moves out.
And so do we see them drive to the beach getaway?
We do see her get in the car. I don't know if we see a whole lot of driving. I did note that while it is red, the 1964 GMC 1500 pickup truck doesn't really say communist. But that's what the Ecumenical Liberation Army drives.
Right.
So we saw that. But that's very, very few motor vehicles in this one.
All right, shall we go to the numbers?
Let's go to the numbers.
All right, a little bit of trivia before we go to the numbers. Peter Finch died before the Academy Awards were to take place, where he was nominated for Best Actor. He won, making him the first performer ever to receive a posthumous award at the Oscars. The second winner was fellow Australian Heath Ledger for The Dark Knight in 2008. And as of 2021, this is the last movie to receive 5 Academy Award nominations in the acting categories. The movie's famous line, "I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore," was voted as the number 19 movie quote by the AFI. And it was voted as number 79 of the 100th greatest movie lines by Premiere Magazine. This film had a budget quite low, $3.8 million, and it made 6 times that domestically. It made $23.7 million at the box office. It gets an 8.1 out of 10 on IMDb. Critics love this movie, giving it a 91%, and audiences are a little bit ahead of them at 93%. This film is 2 hours and 1 minute. I feel like they just call it 2 hours.
Yeah.
Like shave off a little bit.
Yeah. Like that dream sequence. We could ditch that.
Right. It's rated R. It is a drama and the studio was MGM. It has 20 wins and 27 nominations. Like I said, Peter Finch won for Best Actor. Faye Dunaway won for Best Actress. And Beatrice Straight won for Best Supporting. Patty won for Best Screenplay. And everyone else got noms. Sydney, Peter, Faye, and Patty won Golden Globes that year. So writing, directing, and then Peter and Faye Dunaway, Peter Finch and Faye Dunaway won for acting. We watched this one on Apple. We forked over a whole $3.99 for it. So if you too are interested in Network, we should have looked on Canopy. I feel like this is one that would have been on Canopy.
Could have been.
I need to, my Just Watch app, I got to make sure it's checking Canopy as well. So let's see what we're going to watch next week. Next week's film will be...
Ooh, speaking of Maryland, Some Like It Hot.
Ooh, fun. I love this movie. Oh my God, I love this movie so much. It was one of my favorites in film school. I love Tony Curtis. All right.
Oh, wow. I don't believe I have seen that in its entirety.
Totally different than Network.
Good. Little palate cleanser.
Yeah. I think you'll enjoy it. It's a good fun time.
Fun time.
All right. Everybody have a great weekend and never forget.
Dodges never stop and neither do the movies.
Thanks for listening to Dodge Movie Podcast with Christy and Mike Dodge of Dodge Media Productions. To find out more about this podcast and what we do, go to dodgemediaproductions.com. Subscribe, share, leave a comment and tell us what we should watch next. Dodges never stop, and neither do the movies.